Our second reading this morning comes to us from Matthew's Gospel, starting in chapter 9 at verse 35, going through the 10th chapter to verse 23. This is on page 885 in your pew Bible. Listen for the word of the Lord. Then Jesus went out about all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and curing every disease and sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, ask the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest." Then Jesus summoned his 12 disciples and gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out and to cure every disease and every sickness. These are the names of the 12 apostles. First, Simon, also known as Peter, and his brother Andrew, James the son of Zebedee, and his brother John, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas and Matthew, the tax collector, James, the son of Alphaeus, and Thaddeus, Simon the Cananean, and Judas Iscariot, the one who would betray him. These 12 Jesus sent out with the following instructions: "Go nowhere among the Gentiles and enter no town of the Samaritans, but rather go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. As you go, proclaim the good news. Kingdom of heaven has come near. Cure the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, cast out demons. You received without payment, give without payment. Take no gold or silver or copper in your belts, no bag for your journey, or no staff, or two tunics, or sandals. For laborers deserve their food. Whatever town or village you enter, find out who in it is worthy and stay there until you leave. As you enter the house, greet it. If the house is worthy, let your peace come upon it. But if it is not worthy, let your peace return to you. If anyone will not welcome you or listen to your words, shake off the dust from your feet as you leave that house or town. For truly I tell you, it will be more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah on the day of judgment than for that town. So see, I am sending you out like sheep into the midst of wolves, so be wise as serpents and gentle as doves. Be aware of them, for they will hand you over to councils and flog you in their synagogues, and you will be dragged before the governors and the kings because of me and as testimony to them and the Gentiles. When they hand you over, do not worry about what you will speak or what you are to say. For what you are to say will not be given to you until that time. For it is not you who speaks, but the Spirit of your Father speaking through you. Brothers will betray brothers to death, and a father his child, and children will rise against parents and have them put to death. And you will be hated by all who know me because of my name. But the one who endures to the end will be saved. When they persecute you in one town, flee to the next, for truly I tell you, you will not have gone through all the towns of Israel before the Son of Man comes." Friends, this is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Will you pray with me? Oh God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be holy and acceptable in your sight. O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Well, it's good to be with you this morning. Little bit more about me. So Pastor Sarah and I were in seminary together, and we were actually in a preaching class together to evaluate each other's sermons many, many years ago. So she apparently thought I was good enough to come preach to you this morning. See, I got the jokes. I got the laughter. There we go. That's a theme running through today. But yes, as was shared in my bio, so yes, I am an ordained Presbyterian minister, but work now full-time as an assistant professor of social work at Hope College. I'm a licensed psychotherapist. I have a small private practice. And I view a lot of my ministry today working with students at Hope College who are seeking to discern what it means to go out and live out their faith, particularly as social workers. As social workers, we're often called to go out and work with the least and the lost. Very similar, that I feel, to the Great Commission that God gives to the disciples in the passage. So for me, I think a lot about how our faith is embodied, how things kind of come into being. And so I thought the best way to kind of drop you into this is to give you a glimpse into what one of my days might actually be like. So I'm going to share with you a story of a client of mine. This client, names have been changed, details have been changed. I do have the client's permission to share this. But the story that I'm going to share with you will kind of drop you into a scenario that might reflect on our text today. So I'm going to tell you about Sam. So Sam is probably hands down one of the funniest hours of my week, which is saying a lot when I already work with college students. But Sam is one of these clients that I'm going to be honest with you, sometimes as therapists we do have clients where we're like, this will be a fun hour, this will be a fun time. You see, Sam has a joke for everything. And when I say everything, I mean everything. Rough week at work, he's got a joke for that. Falling out with his brother, joke, and usually a pretty good one. The sheer indignity of having to wait for me to log on to my Zoom room if I'm running a few minutes late, oh, he has material for that if I'm late. Our sessions are genuinely a delight, and I usually end our sessions with a smile on my face. However, that said, a couple months into the work that I did with Sam, I noticed something. In all those weeks of laughing, the two of us had not really gotten too close to the thing that he had actually come in wanting to work on. Every single time, the conversation drifted towards something deeper or more tender, something that might have cost him a little bit to say aloud. Here came the joke, right on cue. And both of us would sail safely over it, laughing. So one day, I said, as gently as I knew how, "You know, Sam, I get it. You're genuinely hilarious. But you know, I noticed something. I notice that I can predict when you're gonna laugh. It's every single time we get close to something that might actually hurt." And so what did Sam do when I said this? Well, he made a joke, of course. He grinned and he said, "Yeah, you know, it works pretty well, doesn't it?" And it does. That's the whole trouble. It works. A joke, a laugh, it can be a door that you hold shut from the inside. Not because there's nothing behind it, but because there's something behind it, and letting it swing open might feel like too much. That laughter is less about joy. It's armor. It's protective. It lightens the mood. It's a touch and a go. It's armor that Sam has, that he has used to protect himself from opening that door. And if, you know, I'm anything like Sam, and I'm sure, you know, some of you are laughing, you probably relate to this too, you've probably done the same thing, right? In those moments of tension, right? Somebody tries to make a joke, you know, maybe it's that person at the family dinner table when there's conflict or arguing, right? Maybe it was when you were growing up, it was the class clown, right? Maybe you were the class clown, somebody who would try and cut the tension. And so I bring you this story of Sam because I want you to relate to the woman that we hear in our first reading who has a laugh just like him, Sarah. In our passage, three strangers show up at the Oaks of Mamre in the heat of the day. And Abraham, bless him, does the good ancient hospitality thing, right? He throws together a whole feast. Somewhere over lunch, right, over that family dinner table, if you will, one of the visitors says something seemingly casually, but, you know, maybe you can relate to this around a dinner table, kind of drops a bombshell and says, you know, by this time next year, Sarah, you're going to have a son. Now, you could probably imagine the weight of that moment. If you invited a stranger into your house, first of all, who does that these days? But, you know, that's what they did back in those days. You invite somebody into your home, they drop a bombshell on you. You might feel uncomfortable. You might feel the hairs on your neck go up. You have to feel the weight of that, especially given who Sarah was. Now, we know from earlier in the text, Sarah had tried for decades to bear a child and had not been able to up until this point. Indeed, even to bring about an heir, Sarah concocted a plan to have her midwife, Hagar, bear this child. But Sarah herself had not been able to conceive. And so again, for the stranger to come in and drop this bombshell, a source of tension and of pain, would have felt, at the very least, quite uncomfortable. Now, they have spent decades hoping and praying, and they probably would feel that their hope was a little foolish at this point. So who was this stranger to come in and just spit this out here? So Sarah, listening, begins to laugh. And the scripture is pretty blunt about this, right? It actually tells us what she is thinking. She laughs and thinks to herself, at my age? Really? After everything? And there it is, right? That's Sam's move. That laugh that arrives right on cue to keep this point from landing. Because see, a promise like this, a lean into the tension, that's a tender moment. And Sarah knows better. Sarah says, if I actually believe it, to let myself believe what this stranger is saying, after 90 years, that's going to cost me something. Many of you might know that. Maybe in your life you have hoped for something, for years, for decades, and it's just not coming. And now at this point of your life, you know better than to get your hopes up. Right? We have a phrase for that, right? Get your hopes up. Don't get your hopes up. You know that if you keep hoping, that's going to cost you something. So she laughs it off. She does what maybe many of you do. You make light of it. Okay, whatever. She tries to sail safely past it. And so here's the moment, though, I want us to listen to. God hears the laughter. And now, I don't know about you, when I grew up hearing this passage, I have heard God in somewhat of a scolding tone, right? That God is scolding Sarah for laughing. The visitor says, why did Sarah laugh? Is anything too wonderful for the Lord? And that word wonderful, in Hebrew, it translates from the word pala, which means also too hard or too difficult or even impossible. Is anything too impossible for God? Now again, you might cringe up a little bit. You might feel for Sarah. You might say, oh, God's calling Sarah out. But notice what does not happen. Sarah gets scared. She denies it, right? I didn't laugh. And I feel this tug of empathy towards Sarah, who's been trying, has suffered through so much false hope, and then seemingly gets called out by God. And she does, I think, what anyone would do, what Sam would do if I was in session with him. He might deny it, might minimize it. But notice what God doesn't do. God does not pounce. God does not judge. There's no lecture. There's no, how dare you doubt me? Who do you think you are? Do you know who I am? There's none of that. Nobody drags Sarah out from behind the tent flap. Nobody scolds her to shame her for the armor that she has built over 90 long, hard years. She just gets seen. Gently, in the exact place that she had sealed off and stopped letting anyone near. You know, and that's the gospel, right? In one quiet scene, not Sarah, stop laughing. It was, I see you. You did laugh. And I wonder why I hear judgment in that. Maybe you've heard judgment in that. Maybe you are better than I and don't hear judgment in that. But when I hear God saying, yes, you did laugh, what I hear is an acknowledgement. And I realized that's what I would do with Sam. I'd say, but Sam, you did. Gently, empathically, leaning in. It wasn't stop laughing. It wasn't don't use your defenses. It's I hear you. And the thing that you have stopped letting yourself want, it is not too wonderful for God. It is not impossible for God. And then, jumping ahead a few chapters into chapter 21, it actually happens. Sarah indeed has a son, and they name him Isaac, or Isaac, which in Hebrew means, of all things, the one who laughs. You see what God did there, right? God took the laughter and turned it inside out. The same body, the same sound, but now it means the opposite thing. The laugh that used to be a shield is now pure delight. And here's the line Sarah says, and this is the line that I believe kind of cuts through everything this morning. God has brought me laughter. Everyone who hears will laugh with me. Everyone who hears will laugh, will take joy, will take delight with me. And so you catch what happens to this joy, right? It got bigger. In chapter 18, the laughter is contained in the tent. It's contained in Sarah. She did not want to let that laughter, let that hope go further than her. It was her armor, her shield. But now the laughter, the joy has spilled out. It stops being private. The laugh that she once held inside, she now wants the whole world to hear because joy cannot be kept inside. It pulls people in and then spills out to all who see it. The very people who might once have laughed at her now get to laugh with her. And that's what joy does. It refuses to stay small, and it refuses to stay alone. Now hold on to that, because I know some of you might be thinking, okay, well, this is great, wraps up really nicely, you know, Sarah gets what she wants, but I have not gotten what I have been hoping for. You might be saying, hey, that's a nice way to wrap up a sermon, but I am still waiting. And in truth, right, that actually reflects more of the realities of my clients, of the students that I work with who are wrestling with their own spiritual growth and discernment. Clients that I've seen for decades who are still waiting. They're wondering, when is their joy going to come? So while on the one hand, Sarah's story wraps up nicely, there's a question of, where is the joy for those of us who are still waiting? So let's move over into Matthew's gospel, right, for the gospel reading. In this passage, we see Jesus going from town to town, village to village, and the gospel says that when he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. And that word compassion, in Greek, I'm better at Hebrew than I am at Greek, so I'm not going to try and pronounce this word. But in Greek, it refers to a feeling from the gut. It's not just a, oh, so nice. It's a gut compassion. It is a pulling towards. You feel it in the pit of your stomach. And so Jesus didn't have pity on the crowds, right? I've heard some translations maybe say pity, but it is better to say had empathy for. right, felt deeply moved for these people. He ached for them. And notice that while the words are a bit different, it is very similar to the way that God looks at Sarah. Right? God did not speak from on high. Right? We have many examples in Genesis where God speaks to Abraham from on high, right? The voice in the clouds. But God spoke at level. God came down to speak with Sarah. We often talk about Christ as the incarnation coming to earth. But in this story in Genesis, right, we actually see God coming to earth in a different way, to speak face to face with Sarah. To be present to her, was moved by her. And so what does Jesus do similar? Jesus doesn't just hold on to that ache. He sends it out. He gathers up ordinary, unremarkable disciples who are wondering, what on earth did I get myself into? He sends them into the towns to carry the very things that they themselves have received, the joy that they have received in being called, to go find people who are harassed and helpless, and to hand them a welcome. You know, and he's honest with them about it. He tells them straight, look, not everyone is going to be glad to see you. Some will swing the door open wide. Some will slam it right in your face. And when a door slams, keep walking. Don't carry it with you. Don't bleed over it. Don't let one slammed door become the whole story that you tell the whole world. Keep going. And now, as somebody who I spend my days, right, sitting with people who pour themselves out, I want to put a big underline beneath that. Jesus does not send his people out to be martyrs. He sends us out to be sustainable. The welcome that you offer the world has to be a welcome that you can actually survive offering. So when the door slams, you know, shake the dust off, but go find a door that's open and keep going. So how does this tie in? Well, go back to Genesis, right? We see a woman who is in a tent, who had stopped letting herself hope. And she laughs the laugh of somebody who is guarding her own heart. God doesn't shame the laugh. God transforms it into a joy so big that she has no choice but to throw the doors open and invite the whole world into it. And I suspected that some of you walked in this morning as Sarah. You got a laugh. You've been keeping in a tent. There's something that you have quietly stopped letting yourself want out loud. Because wanting it, and not getting hurt, by not hoping too much. That's the way you've learned to survive. Because it hurt too much the last time around. So hear this, gently, with no lecture attached. The thing that you have sealed off is not too wonderful for God. And others of you, you've walked in already laughing the other laugh, the joyful laugh. You have made it somehow to a joy you genuinely weren't sure you were going to get. And the word to you is Sarah's own word. Don't keep it in a tent. Everyone who hears will laugh with you. The joy that you know, the world needs to hear. Lord knows we need some more joy in the world today. Your joy is never meant to be a private thing. It's meant to spill out. So go out, like Jesus calls the disciples to do. Go out. Find those who are helpless and hurting. Go out. Share the joy of the good news that you have come to know. That joy is meant to be shared. It's not meant to be contained. And you might come across somebody who's not quite ready to receive it, right? You might find those doors that get slammed in your face. Keep going. Do not be discouraged. Imagine if God was discouraged when Sarah laughed and said, well, I guess you don't get this baby after all. God was present. God didn't let it shut down the whole plan, didn't storm off in a frustrated fit. God was present. So if the door slams, don't hold on to it. Keep going. Keep sharing the joy with a world so desperately in need. So people of God, let us be the people who hear the good news, the joy, and laugh. Then go out and find whoever is still hiding in their tent. Let them know there is joy to be had. There's room at the table. And everyone who hears this, may they laugh with us in joy. In the name of the Creator, Redeemer, and Sustainer. Amen. Will you pray with me?